Roker knows his stuff, I'll tell you that. We'll get on a great breakout session. I think you'll understand a little bit more. So I don't want to drag it all out, but I'll let my young friend here do his thing. Macy?
Turn the pack on. Turn.
Casey, can you turn your mic on?
There's a little switch on the top.
Great. How's that, John?
There you go.
So I cover two facilities. I cover our Sugar Lake facility, which is at the corner of William Strace's 59 and also Richmond as well. No conflicts of interest. Since I am the only occupational therapist and hand therapist presenting, I just wanted to give you a brief background on what the requirements are in order to become each one of those. So for occupational therapists, it is a master's level program, and you have to pass a national credentialing exam by the National Board of Certification of Occupational Therapy. Licensed by the state of Texas, have to meet all of those requirements, and we're allowed, once we have met the requirements, we can practice in all of the usual settings. Also, for certified hand therapy, it is a national certification. Only someone who has passed the test and met the requirements is able to have CHT behind their name. So it can be an OT or PT, but you have to have at least 4,000 hours of documented upper extremity rehab treatment, pass the national exam. You have to maintain and recertify every 5 years. 85% of all PhDs are OT and then PT and on down the line. What is good about this is that if you ever do have to refer to somebody, make sure they have the CHT behind their name. Now, even though it says certified hand therapist, we treat more than the hands. The exam literally goes from neck down to the hand. But within my practice, I see some shoulder, but for the most part, neck and the stand.
Okay.
So some common statements regarding visual and hand injuries. A lot of times, unfortunately, it does get dismissed. A lot of times, I've only hurt my finger. I just jammed it. I just twisted it. No big deal. But I always like to say there's a whole lot more than meets the eye when it comes to the hand. So you have something right here, ring finger, ecchymosis, doesn't look to be too bad, but then you see the doc and it turns out to be this. Another example, common PIP injury, I just twisted it, just jammed it, no big deal. You see the doc, get a film, turns out to be this. Again, there's much more to a finger than meets the eye. If you look at a finger, it doesn't look terribly impressive. Little skin, bone, no big deal. But just this right here is just one aspect of a finger. You got a picture, you have the top portion, extensor apparatus, sagittal, you get to see extensor and flexor, and on down the line. And even this doesn't do it justice. There's no skin, there are no vessels, no nerve. No pulley system. Go a little bit deeper, there's even more than meets the eye. Nerves working way through, pulley system for the fingers, thenar eminence, hypothenar. You say, well, it's not that big of a deal, I can still move it, there's still some function to it. But in just the hand, 29 major minor bones, 29 joints, 123 ligaments, 35 muscles, and on down the line. So all of that is within about a 6-inch span of your hand. So a lot of times you have an athlete with an injured digit, injured thumb, it's not that big of a deal. I should be able to work through. So quick example of this is just to show you how difficult it can be is that you just hold up your hand and just hold any finger you want. I'm going to just hold the index and just hold that one finger. Now try making a fist. It's impossible. You can't do it. So what I did was to show you the value of one finger and one thumb. We did a JMAR test, and literally, as soon as I turned this in the Journal of he and Sarge, there's a study that came out showing that just one T3 injury, you lose at least 10% of grip strength. So the standard setting is on number 2, and I just did a before and after test. There we go. Now you have just one digit. So finger injury. Top picture, full grip, all digits, 50 pounds of grip strength. Extend one digit, drops down to 30. So with just one finger injury, 20 pound loss of grip, 40% decrease. Thumb, same thing, 50 pounds, remove the thumb, 50% decrease. Well, went from 50 pounds of grip down to 25. Now, having said that, with that being the case, do you trust any of your athletes to not only perform, but perform well, and do you expect them to do these things safely? I'd say it'd be pretty difficult. So this morning we're going to go over some common injuries to the hand. We're going to go to digits. Whenever we talk about digits, it's literally the fingers and the thumb themselves, and the hand is usually the motor carpal area. So I'm going to go over mallet, boutonniere, jersey, PIP, phalangeal fractures, thumb, and then metacarpal. All right, first, mallet injury. This is how it'll present to you. So the digit will be in PIP flexion. They will not be able to actively extend. Now, if you push on it and you say fire, you can use some of the extensor apparatus where they can maybe hold it, but for the most part, if you have them flex and extend, they will not be able to extend. They will be stuck down. May or may not be painful. I've had some that they literally could not feel a thing. No signs of injury. They were just doing something, popped, and they come in like this. So if it's an acute injury, you'll be able to passively extend, straighten it easily. If it's something more chronic, you can push on and it will not move. All right, so the mechanism of injury and the pathomechanics, it is a forced flexion of an extended digit. So a lot of times it'll be a ball hitting the fingertip. Sometimes it can also be a loaded mechanism like this. I've had a number of injured patients who are just playing around or flicking people. They load it up, pop, and next thing you know, they come in with a mallet because they pop their extensor tendon. It is a tendon injury. Sometimes it does require surgery. And there can be just a tendon pop, or sometimes it can, right there, just tendon avulsion. But sometimes right here, you'll also get a bony aspect. The medical treatment is that the VIP is in neutral to a very slight hyperextension, only about 10 degrees. Cannot go too far because if you do that, your skin begins to blanch and you can lead to necrosis. 24/7, anywhere from 6 to 8 weeks without fail. If they take it off and start to experiment, the clock starts all over again, and all they do is put themselves at risk for having to have surgery because they keep re-injuring the tendon. So once healed, the doc will begin light motion and also transition to nighttime use. So the orthosis management, I'll have pictures of that in just a second. You have to maintain the correct position of the digit. PIP remains free. That is important because a lot of times patients will come in because they've been placed in something where it blocks their joint motion. Next thing you know, instead of them just having a VIP injury, they now come in for PIP stiffness as well. There's no, all the studies show there's no one technique that works best, but custom is best. But custom orthoses are best. Many different examples of, so we have a common stack splint and on down the line with the lumiform. But this is the most common one that I make. So as you can see, right through here, the PIP is free. You have the volar dorsal. You can see the angle. That puts them into neutral to slight hyperextension. And I have them supinated where you can see that the PIP is free. There we go. So, have an athlete come in, and so this right here is the way that I like to immobilize them. I use zona state to connect the skin to the orthosis. So as you can see, full VIP collection. But also, this brown tape is also kinesio. So I like doing that, especially if they're going to be out playing and they're going to sweat a lot. So that way, the vision will not slip off. In the rehab aspect of it, the doc will allow you to begin motion, usually right about 6 weeks, and just start off with light blocking exercises and VIP motion. But with this, just to have you think about it, as soon as someone comes out and you have the doctor's order and they say, okay, begin range of motion, what is something that you do not want to do with this patient population? Exactly. You do not want to have passive VIP flexion. That is a guaranteed way of popping the tendons or giving them a slight lag. So light active motion, no passive motion. This right here, just examples of standard exercises. So straight fist, going to a hook, so start straight, have them fire down, and then lightly to a full fist, straight, hook, full fist. Then after a few weeks, if they're still a little tight, you can begin with light blocking, the VIP, and also for IV flexion. Next, loop manager. This is the way that they would present. Hyperextension, VIP flexion, VIP hyperextension. So as you can see, VIP flexion, the VIP hyperextension. Motion is limited in both directions, but primarily to extension. Again, just like with the mallet in chronic cases, if they've been like that for a while, if you try mobilizing them, you will not be able to get them straight. A good test for this is the Elson's test. Pretty easy to remember because you put them down in this position, looks a little bit like an L. And then from here, you would say straighten. If you have them fire as hard as they can, but it doesn't feel like there's anything there when they pop the tendon, if you can feel some resistance, then you can feel confident that the tendon is intact. So mechanism of injury, it's a zone 3 tendon injury. And this happens in much the same way as the mallet. A lot of times it is a traumatic blow. But as you can see right here, this is what happens. You have the zones of the extensor tendon, 1, 2, 3. So right there of the PIP, the tendon pops, and there is the assumption of the position with the hyperextension, flexion, and hyperextension. So with this type of injury, what do you think is a common injury that would put you in this position anyway? Most any type of PIP injury, especially dislocation, because as you can see right through here, if it goes up, down, right there of the PIP area, the sensor tendon is compromised. So medical treatment, mobilize full extension, VIP. You want to have somebody mobilized, and you want to make sure that the MP is free, and full-time immobilization, and sometimes it can be a tendon repair. For the arthrosis management, just like I said, full PIP extension. You want to have the DIP somewhat immobilized so they don't begin to droop down and MP is free. So here's an example of what I would mean. So as you can see, you want to keep the vision in full extension. So you have the volar dorsal aspect right here, and you can see that the MP is allowed to be free. Right here, they can remove that in order to do the VIP exercises, which are allowed. They do not have to stay completely immobilized. That will prevent any further tissue tightness. And through here, I'll go with their strap so it's easily removed. Rehab, based on the doc's exam, usually anywhere from 4 to 6 weeks out, they can begin motion. But with this, what motion do you want to avoid as soon as they come out? They say, okay, begin range of motion. What do you not want to do? You do not want to go into full flexion. You do not want to stress the PIP area because you're putting maximum stress on the MP tendon. So what we do for this condition is you want to start with graded active motion. So with this, you start at anywhere from 20 to 30 degrees motion. Put a goniometer on it. Measure it, bend the uniform. That way they can safely begin to perform active motion without stressing the tendon. So right here, full extension, which they're allowed, you go down, and just back and forth. And as the weeks go by, you can bend an extra 5 to 10 degrees to gradually have them come down toward full IP flexion. Jersey fingers. So first we talked about the extensor tendon injuries, now we're getting into upper splice weight.
the digit rest and full extension or more extension as compared to the other digits, as you can see right here. Natural resting hand posture is every digit slightly flexed with an ulna grip. As you can see, ring finger completely extended. Also, it is unable to fully flex and perform a full fist as the other digits. And a quick test for that is one, just visual, but also blocking test where you hold the digit in full extension. Hold volar dorsal and have them try to fire the VIP early. If they're not able to fire, then you can count that they have a jersey finger or FTP injury. So unlike the mallet, where it was a trauma to extension, here it is a trauma from flexion toward extension. So as you can see over here with the football player right there, this athlete did wind up having a jersey finger, because as he pulled away, full flexion, and then resisted extension. And also an interesting fact is that about 75% of the injuries are of the ring finger. So as you can see through here, and if you block yourself just right, you can see that the ring finger extends about 5 millimeters farther than the others. So it is the most common finger for a jersey finger. This condition right here is only fixed by surgery. You cannot rehab this, you cannot splint this. The only way it can be repaired is with surgery, and truly needs to be done by a true hand surgeon who does this on a regular basis. And if you have any suspicion of this at all, get them in, because the quicker you repair a tendon, the better the outcome. And as for the rehab aspect, this really needs to be treated by a hand therapist who works closely with a hand surgeon, because the protocols in the rehab for this are based on specialized orthotics, specialized exercises. So you really do not want to have someone who does not have the credentials of CHD behind their name treating this, because if not, you're almost looking for a rupture. Move on to PFP sprain strains. As you can see, it's always a VIP joint, a diminished joint. Usually you can count on one side being larger than the other, and the digit is usually in a flexed position, ecchymosis, and with limited active range. So as you can see right here, sliding into a base here, and also the more acute picture there. So the PIP, zone 3, extensor tendon, as you can see right through there. And what makes this especially troublesome is that you have so many structures within a very small area. You have the extensor apparatus, you have your flexor system, you have the collateral ligaments, so you have all of this in one area. So really don't look at this as just a PIP injury. Look at this as an elbow, look at this as a knee, because the elbow, knee, and PIP, in all studies, they all trade places of which joint is the most difficult to rehab or to regain motion. So the injuries can go volar dorsal. We just focus on the dorsal because the dorsal is the most common. So as you can see, the P2, P3 are dorsal in respect to P1. So with this injury, you not only can get ligament tears, but also you can get fractures. So the more of the bone you have fraction, the more unstable the area becomes. Also, with this injury, you can have a lot of instability because of the volar plate. It keeps you from going into hyperextension, keeps the joint steady. A lot of times, that can
YouTube should be.
So, with this, medical management, if it's stable, less than 10% of the surface being injured, rest for a few days, begin to buddy tape. Stable with a fracture, 30% less. You can go with the light dorsal blocking that keeps them in slight flexion. Unstable, surgery. So with this, as I said in the last slide, how you want to keep the joint, keep the PIP anywhere from 10 to 30 degrees of flexion. That is important because they were injured this way. You do not want to stress the structure, so you want to keep them in very slight flexion. The higher the number, the more unstable the joint was. So if you're on the low end, you had a pretty stable joint. So as you can see, this is something that will make slight flexion. Now good dorsal on this to prevent them going into full extension, but also allows them active motion.
So that was the dorsal dislocation. This right here is a lateral sprain. What's especially troublesome with these is the aspect of the rotational component. Because as you rotate, you can tear the collateral, but also you can get a fragment and get a fracture with it as well. So if it's stable, body tape, again, motion, unstable, fracture, then goes to surgery. So some different body taping techniques that you can go with depending on how much stability that you need. This is my favorite version right here because the pill band sticks the digits together. It helps with the swelling and then you build on top of the zones. So they're nice.
Is there any video or audio?
And they're completely locked together.
That's attached to
it. Really makes a nice safe thing. Where I noticed that with this technique, it can slip and slide. And here, usually very unbalanced. So as you can see, completely immobilized, and you get a nice full flexion and extension. So if you have a lateral injury, this is an orthosis that can be made for. As you can see right here, MP, PIP, VIP are left free, but the mid portion is completely immobilized, full MP flexion, and also runs VIP motion. And what's great about that is that you can body tape that, you can have helmets, you can have most anything to hit them, and the metal joint will not move. And with the rehab, again, motion is not allowed. Do not want any stresses to the area, so no testing to see if they can turn this way, that way. Nice, easy, straight ahead. And with this, what is the most dangerous activity for them to perform? It'd be anything with a twisting motion. So flex bars, trying to squeeze towels, anything that puts a lateral twist on that. You do not want to have anything in the hand. You want to just, again, act in motion without any resistance. So there are many different phalangeal fractures that we have. We have P1, P2, P3. Just for the purpose of this, we're just going to stick with P1, since P1 is the most common injury. Okay, many different fracture types. Again, with this, along with the lateral PIP injury that we saw, the most damaging part of this and what you really want to keep an eye out for is the rotation of the digit. So just some examples of fixation. Obviously, the more hardware, the more serious the injury was. So with this, you can have them, depending on the severity of the injury, on what the doctor allows. Sometimes, if it's very unstable, you'll have something that will cross the wrist. If they are more stable, you have them hand-based, but as you see in both pictures, the MPs are flexed because that position puts less stress on P1. So remember, what you do not want to have them in full extension, you want to have them in slight MP flexion. So with these P1 injuries, flexion and extension, both of them are difficult to achieve, but just like with the knee and elbow, anything crossing the VIP, you can almost guarantee they're going to have difficulty with extension. So this is the quick test that you can have with your athletes to where, again, with this injury, the most common side effect, but also the most damaging side effect is rotation. So quick way to monitor that, either acute or post-acute, is light, easy motion, where make sure they don't sandwich together because you can block the rotation. Do that just a little bit of daylight and just have them fire down when they come up. So if you begin to see rotation, get them to the dock right away. If you don't trust the way they're moving, you just hold forearm extension, squeeze about mid-leg. So if you see me right here, squeeze, get them nice, even flexion of the flexors. And that way you can also see if you have any type of rotation. So we're going to next with the thumb injury. UCL, very common injury with the digit. You have the UCL test. As you can see, put the MP in about 30 degrees of flexion, light radial based stress. If you hit an endpoint, they're intact. If it just keeps going, or you're a flick or a pop, then they have injured the UCL region. So again, much like the mallet injury, it is something usually that is stationary and the athlete is moving. A lot of times it can be with a pole or a bat or a device, or sometimes just a fall here. So as you can see, baseball player here, hitting the bag, you see a little bit. So medical management, if they're stable, immobilized for a few weeks, and you go from there. If they're unstable or they have a sternum lesion, the only thing I will fix that is surgery. This right here is an orthosis that I make for many athletes. And I have a picture of David right there with the explanation that you do not have to use the biggest, thickest material that you have. You do not have to block them down in order for them to be stable. What's most important is layers. So if you're going to stay warm, you layer up. And if you want strength, you go with layers. So I have the pre-wrap, the orthosis, tape, and then follow that up with coating. I promise. And as you can see right there, full motion, but they will not be able to move the MP region. Next is the metacarpal. So you can see right here, telltale sign, big lump, rotation, also movement of motion. Also another test is the knuckle is gone, you can guarantee that the metacarpal is shortened, but you always look for this right here, nice rotation all the way down, and you always want to see knuckles. You always have a dorsal aspect to it because the pole of the intrinsics right here, so that's why you always have a dorsal aspect. So conservative casting, 3 to 6 weeks, more unstable, for surgery. So sometimes this can be over the wrist or even hand-based, depending on how stable it is. But we're here, this one is over the wrist, dorsal-based. And what's important is that you have the dorsal load there so they do not begin to climb, but also it keeps the digit from rotating and also keeps them from developing loopy fingers. And this right here is an example of a plantar orthosis that I have. So this right here, third metacarpal fracture, this piece of padding, orthoplast on top, pad. And again, the same aspect with this. You don't need to put the heaviest material on it, something light, but layer it up. Pre-wrap, fill band, as you can see, third metacarpal is fully protected, but they still have full flexion. And with this, the most common side effect or the most difficult aspect of this would be what to gain based on this picture. What do you think would be most difficult to achieve based on this? A lot of times it's going to be digital extension. Right here, because as you can see, the EBC is very intimate with the skin. And the two scar down very easily together. So extension, not flexion, is going to be what's most difficult to achieve. Just examples of exercises. Get back to that. So with the motion, easy way to achieve full extension is going to wrist extension, because as you go into flexion, the digits naturally extend. So come here, fire up, an easy, safe way to regain digital extension. And there's toward the end, you'll see a study, something from hand pearls, from the Journal of Hand Surgery, where it says the most devastating aspect of digital injuries is stiffness. So they can put things back together, but the scarring, the adhesions, and the stiffness after the fact are the most common, or the most common and also the most devastating aspects of hand rehab, and also with hand injuries. So I have a breakout session where I'll be making the orthoses, whomever would like one. In a breakout session, I brought some of my eval tools with me and answer any questions or make anything else that you like. I would modify the splinting area for y'all so you can take some demos away with you if you like. Thank you very much.